and welcome to American Poverty Research, a podcast brought to you by the Center for Poverty Research at the University of California, Davis. I'm Ethan Crum. Since this is our first episode, I'd like to give a quick overview of what we hope to do with this podcast. We plan on interviewing researchers from a variety of fields about topics that are broadly related to poverty in the United States. Today we are joined by Professor of Economics Ann Stevens, who is also the Deputy Director of the Center for Poverty Research here at UC Davis, to talk about CTEs, or Career Technical Education. So let's get started. Ann, what can you tell us about CTEs?
So I should probably say a little about what CTE, or Career Technical Education, really is and what it means, because it's a somewhat new term. So CTE is what used to be referred to pretty routinely as vocational education. In recent years, the terms kind of get used interchangeably, but I think in recent years, CTE has become the new catchphrase. But it's really refers to education in both secondary school and in post-secondary that is aimed at training people for specific careers or occupations or industries. So much more closely tied to a specific job or career than we tend to think of most higher education in this country. So that's what CTE is. My research on this really came out of a couple of longer term interests. So one is I've done lots of work over the years on job loss and displacement, and often displaced workers are referred for retraining or training programs, and CTE is one way that that training or retraining happens. The other, though, is that in working with some colleagues, one colleague in particular, Michal Kurlander at the School of Education, along with my former graduate student and co-author Michelle Gross, they had data on the California Community College System, which is the largest community college system in the nation. And the data they had available on that system was pretty spectacular. They had information on all the students, course taking, courses, grades, and importantly, a link to labor market outcomes, quarterly earnings, and industry sector of those students. And so as a first pass at combining these two areas of interest, we started looking at, within these community colleges, career technical education and what they did to students' earnings in the labor market. So that's how the project got started and sort of what the goal of the project was.
So just to reiterate, the focus of your work on CTEs has been on how they affect labor market outcomes.
Right. And, you know, one reason, there are a couple of things that made it really important to focus on that. One is that as anyone who, certainly any economist or policy person knows, there's lots and lots of empirical work on education and on higher education. But for a long time, many people, economists in particular, had really ignored the career technical or vocational side of what community colleges do. We're much more focused on the more traditional academic mission and the transfer mission. But it turns out that, at least in California, and it's true elsewhere as well, about half of the degrees that community colleges award are in the CTE field. So we thought it was a really understudied area. The other thing, though, that prompted us to move forward on this is that over the course of the Obama administration, as we were dealing with stagnant wages at the bottom half of the distribution and looking for ways to kind of boost workers' incomes, there were a number of federal initiatives that really focused on these CTE programs and really tried to point to those, provided some expanded funding to use those as a way to lift up the earnings of workers closer to the bottom. The problem is that if you think about those two points I've just mentioned, we were putting new federal money into this without much evidence on how well they worked or if they worked. And so that really motivated us to take a first look at, you know, how we could quantify and be as rigorous as possible to understand what these programs did to workers' earnings.
Okay, we'll jump right into the paper. Can you tell us something about what California community colleges offer in terms of CTEs?
You know, a big part of starting this project was trying to understand that ourselves, because CTE means a lot of different things in a lot of different institutions and to a lot of different people. So we started out looking at sort of the largest areas or the largest topical areas within CTE. And those they cover a lot of ground. So one of the largest is called allied health occupations, which includes everything from nursing to medical assisting, nurses assistants, radiology technicians, and a whole host of other occupations. There's also something called public and protective services, which provides training for people who want to be firefighters, prison guards, prison officers, and all sorts of related occupations. Family and consumer services is an especially broad category that includes early childhood care, other types of personal services that people might need. And then you get into some of the smaller fields that still cover a lot and offer a lot of degrees, some information technology programs remember, 2-year or less training programs. So it's not a 4-year degree in computer science, but other sorts of IT related things. There are paraprofessional programs in law, such as training to be a paralegal. So that gives you a little bit of the breadth of what these programs cover.
It does seem to be very broad. Do they also vary a lot in how long they take?
The longest programs are essentially 2 years of full-time study, or about 60 credits. But we studied certificate programs that are as short as 6 units of study, or just a couple of classes in a particular area. And so there's all ranges in between. So full-time study, these programs range from a few months to 2 years. And of course, many people spread out the training over many years because they're going part-time. So it can be a fairly dispersed set of, as far as the timing, as how long these certificates and degrees take.
Well, then I should ask, who participates in the programs?
So as you might guess, when I've just told you the vast array of topics, the student population here is very diverse as well. And one thing that ended up being really critical to our paper because of the methodology we wanted to use is that a lot of these students are older. They're not what we think of as traditional college students or the typical 18 to 22 year old group that is going directly from high school into college. The average age of our of the students who received degrees, the average age when they entered the program was in the mid to late 20s. If you look at people who participated in the program, some of whom never wanted to get degrees, and include those who didn't finish, the average age is even higher, so up closer to 30 years of age. So this is different than typical college students, because most of these workers were in fact workers. Most of these students had employment both prior to enrolling and, importantly, during enrollment as well. So there's a lot of combining of work and employment. So that's one aspect or characteristic of these CTE students. If you think about the demographics, again, they're highly varied. The demographics of the CTE students really matches the demographics of the state of California as along race and ethnicity lines. Pretty evenly balanced overall in terms of gender, with men and women being roughly equal, although that varies tremendously across specific fields. Men and women choose to study quite different CTE programs or choose different occupational paths when we see them in these data.
Can you tell us something about how you approach the problem of identifying the effect of CTEs?
Sure. So we wanted to do the best job we could at really identifying the causal effect of CTE or career technical education. And as economists know, anyone who really has looked at education, the challenge there is always to figure out how well the student or the individual would have done in the labor market, even if they didn't have access to the educational opportunity. And we talk and worry, decades and decades of research has worried about ability bias or other types of bias that occur if you attribute all of the earnings after completing an educational program to that educational program without being a little bit careful about who gets into those programs and who completes those programs. So normally, economists have increasingly looked for what we call natural experiments or some sort of policy or other variation that in a sense forces some students to get more education and other students to get less, so that you know it's not simply that the more able students are more likely to complete. So we, you know, that's been a typical response, but when we looked at the tremendous data and the detail we had, we didn't really have that type of approach available to us. But because we had so much data and we had it all linked to earnings over a number of years, over more than a decade, we decided to try a different approach, which was to really use individuals' own earnings prior to enrollment in these CTE programs as the key control variable. So economists know this as referred to as using individual fixed effects, but it's really a simple idea where if you see someone after completing a degree program and you see their earnings are high, well, one way to tell if it was the program that caused that is to look back at their earnings prior to enrolling and see what earnings looked like then. So that's really the approach we took. Now, this hadn't really been done much in higher ed research, people looking at the effects of higher education, because most higher education studies had been done on traditional students. And when a student goes from high school directly into college, you definitely don't want to try to use their prior earnings to control for their ability or what their earnings might be like in the future, because most people at that age won't have any earnings. And even if they do, they're part-time work or well enrolled. So, but with this sample, we got around that because they were older. And so we used this before-after comparison and then also compared them with other workers to see what the before-after comparison for those who didn't complete degrees looked like. And that gave us sort of confidence to that we were getting as close as possible to really identifying the effect of the programs as opposed to just what would have happened to the people anyway.
Now I feel like I should ask the big question, which is, what results do you find?
So our results show, I mean, this is kind of a massive descriptive project in a way, in the sense that we're really just trying to detail the returns to a huge variety of programs. So it's hard to characterize the results as a whole, but I would say the overwhelming result was that these programs, from short-term 4 to 6 month certificates all the way to 2-year certificates or 2-year degrees, have on the whole positive and substantial and statistically significant effects on workers' earnings. And so we look at in detail at very narrow CTE programs, training workers for a specific type of occupation within those broad fields I talked about earlier. And not all of them have positive returns, but the overwhelming majority. And so it does provide, I think, some really solid evidence that these programs are worth investing in and they do produce value to the students that they're serving. So that's the bottom line.
So there's a large variance by field. Can you tell us more about which fields had the largest returns and which ones didn't?
Sure. So one of the fields that's gotten a lot of attention in these study in this area and discussions of this is the health sector. And so as we expected, we found really enormous returns to CTE programs within the health sector. And so at the top of those are 2-year degrees, which tend to be nursing degrees, although there's some other 2-year associate's degrees awarded in health too. And those produce earnings after 2 years of studies, effects on earnings that start at about 50 to 60% increases in quarterly earnings and go up from there.
Wow.
So these are really phenomenally large returns in the health sector. And even for shorter term certificates in health, we found very large. So 1 or 2 year programs that are raising individuals' earnings by 25 or 30 or 40%. So these, we knew that there was prior evidence that the health sector programs were very had very high returns. So In some ways, that wasn't a surprise, although the magnitudes, I think, still surprised me a bit. The thing we wanted to do immediately, though, is people, you know, often these programs, they get a lot of attention, but there's also concern with generalizing that to CTE. So people note that, well, the health sector is unique. It's interestingly, you know, we're talking about a sector that produces very high returns on earnings. But at the same time, it's embedded in a policy environment where we're constantly concerned about cutting costs in health. And so there's a little bit of a catch where if you say, well, the future of to help low-income workers is to put them all into the health sector, at the same time we're trying to hold down cost, that strategy might need a little bit more thought. So that's a little bit of a cautionary note on health. So we did want to step back and say, well, what if we took the health sector out completely? Would we still see these overwhelmingly positive results from CTE? And the answer there is yes. Even without those extraordinary returns in health, we still get very positive, strong returns in all the other fields. And so, you know, if we toss out health, we still get returns for these certificates and degrees that range from about 14 to 25%. So that's how much earnings go up after, again, 6 months to 2 years of studies, even outside of the health sector. So that the extent of the positive returns is quite robust. And, you know, a number of things we tried to do to test the robustness of it, they're very stable. Nothing we did really could diminish those high returns.
I still can't help but ask that there must be a worse performing CTE.
There are some that had surprisingly small returns. And in particular, there were some, and this is, I think, surprising to many, there were particular specific programs within information and technology services that produced either small, statistically significant, insignificant returns or really zero or negative returns. So that, you know, when we first got those results, given all the sort of hype about the IT sector, I think that surprised a lot of people. When we looked at those more closely, though, there are a couple of things that stood out. First, some of the lowest performing programs were actually very, very small programs. So although you got these negative numbers, they were only applying to a pretty small group of people. The other thing is that there's, again, even within IT, there's huge variety in what programs are. So some of those were programs that looked much more like what we might think of as old-fashioned IT, data entry or data technicians or operators that aren't really what we think of today when we think about the IT boom or the tech boom. And so you have to be a little cautious, but there definitely are some programs that don't offer very high returns.
Did you notice any variation in the returns for different types of students?
So we looked at that a lot, and overall, we didn't find huge systematic variation. The one area where at first glance it looked like there were big differences was based on gender. So if you looked at men and women, even within fairly broad types of CTE programs, so the big categories that I mentioned before, like health, protective services, family, consumer, you did see some differences. What we realized, though, is that that was almost entirely because of men and women sorting into different sectors. So when we look at narrow, what we call the four-digit top code is the technical definition, but it's really a very specific, down to the specific occupation you're training for. When we look within those categories, the returns to men and women are very similar. It's just that in some of those, so it's interesting if you think about women, they systematically sort or are sorted, depending on that opens another whole can of worms, but they take very different programs, enroll in different programs than men. But what's interesting is that on average, you don't see a huge difference in the returns because women systematically are overrepresented in two different types of programs. One that we've already talked about are health programs, which are extremely high return. And so that would suggest you might see women on average getting higher returns from CTE. The second, though, is that they also are overrepresented in some very, very low return fields, such as early childhood education. And so if you kind of just group all the programs together, you miss that. But, you know, there are other programs, so public and protective services, many of those programs are very oversubscribed to men and also have some very high returns. Several of those programs in public and protective services, after digging a little, we realized are feeders into sectors such as prison officers and prison guards that have very strong collective bargaining agreements and have very high wages. And so that's another sort of special feature or detail that can be obscured. But those are more heavily male-dominated and have high returns. Within those narrow sectors, though, men and women do about the same. It's just that some have lots of men, some have lots of women. And so, you know, there are some important gender differences to explore, but they don't really show up so much in the average returns.
Let's take a step back and look at CTEs more in general. Why are we hearing about CTEs more and more in the media?
Yeah, so CTEs, or, you know, when you go to broader media, it tends to just get talked about as worker training. They do get a lot of airtime lately, and I think there's a couple of reasons. One is, as I mentioned, we have for a decade or more now started to be increasingly concerned with the fact that wages below the median, certainly, and at the bottom even more so, have either not grown or have fallen in real terms for several decades, with some brief periods that are exceptions. So the recovery in the early 90s. So as these earnings have stagnated for a lot of workers, the other thing people, you know, education is always suggested. More and more students are enrolling in colleges over time. But again, with the exception of some progress during a couple of periods in the past few decades, we aren't seeing more students graduate from four-year colleges. So that has led people to wonder whether the shorter, more job-focused CTE or training programs can be beneficial. And so that created some of the interest at the federal level, but also has gotten talked about a lot. So that's, you know, that's one piece that has heightened interest. The other thing, though, that I think comes up in the media, maybe even more frequently, is there's a very common theme that media from the left, right, and center like to write about, and that is how terrible our training programs are in the U.S. So it's very easy to find these headlines that say, well, public training programs in the U.S. don't work. They're such a failure. Why do we keep investing in federal job training programs? And that might seem mysterious given what I've just told you about returns to CTE. And so we can talk about the reasons for that, but it's definitely it's a little bit of a logical inconsistency in what we hear about CTE. On the one hand, that's the hope of the future. And on the other, oh, we know federal training programs don't work.
So let's go straight into that then. Why do people think that these training programs don't work?
So there's a few reasons. One is that, interestingly, we have to be really precise when we say federal training programs. Usually those are referred to as federal employment and training programs. And most recently, those come under something called the Workforce Investment Opportunities Act, or previously just the Workforce Investment Act. And that's been the sort of umbrella for federal jobs training programs over the past 10 to 20 years. But what's interesting about federal employment and training programs is that many participants in those programs don't actually get any training. And that's why they're referred to as employment and training, because what sometimes those programs do is simply provide short-term job search assistance, get displaced or disadvantaged workers back into the workforce. And Unfortunately, though, it's, you know, this is pretty detailed and those get lumped in. And so we get these fairly flat or not very encouraging results as far as increasing earnings from some of these programs. But it turns out that maybe half or two thirds of the people participating in them haven't actually engaged in any training. So that just sort of falsely condemns the training component because not every worker is actually receiving training.
And there's also variance, right, in people going to for-profit colleges and instead of community colleges.
That's right. That's another newer piece of this that unfortunately I think is making it more and more challenging for workers as well as for policy. A really important paper just came out by two economists, Stephanie Cellini and Mark Turner. Their focus was on for-profit degrees and certificates. And in particular, they focused on these for-profit schools offering short-term certificates that are very much overlapping with the types of CTE programs that are often offered in community colleges. And what they showed is that most students who enter those programs have, in fact, a negative effect on their earnings. Now, the negative effect was mainly because so many of those students in for-profit programs don't ever finish the program. But even among those, the small minority who finished, as a comparison group, Cellini and Turner actually used similar programs in public institutions, which are typically the types of community college programs that I and my co-authors and I studied. And so they show that the for-profit programs, even for students who finish, sometimes there was a small positive return, but systematically much, much lower than what students in comparable public sector community college programs were earning. And so that says, even if you accept the results of my work and say, yes, CTE programs and community colleges do a really good job, for a typical worker, they have to distinguish those programs from the programs that they see ads for in the subway or on the buses that are these for-profit schools that may not have such positive returns.
So what kind of completion rates do we see from CTEs and what leads people to not complete a degree?
Yeah, so the question of completion rates in CTEs is a surprisingly difficult one. And I say surprisingly, I mean, we can look at the number of people who ever enroll in a CTE program. And then we can look a few years later and say, okay, how many of those people now have degrees? And those numbers are low. If I had to give a ballpark, it depends again on public sector versus for-profit, but they're in the range of maybe between 20 and 50%. So quite low. The problem, though, is there's a couple of problems with interpreting that. One is that often, so in our work in California, for example, the CTE programs, interestingly, students are not really asked in a very systematic or thorough way to declare a major or a focus of their studies. And so we have to sort of infer by looking at the courses they take, which students are actually attempting to get a particular CTE certificate or degree. And so once you realize you don't see, it's not easy to quantify how many people are attempting a degree, then it's impossible to really get a completion rate. Now, the other problem, though, is that it's worse than that because, and this is something community colleges in particular have been worried about, which is community colleges have accountability pressures from states, from the federal government. And so they also would like to be able to say something about their completion rates. At the same time, community colleges serve multiple missions. And another mission they serve is to offer what in California, the Community College Chancellor's Office has a term, they refer to people who are skill builders. By this, they mean people who are working in an industry or maybe are changing sectors or industries, but just want to take a couple of courses to refresh their skills. Well, in the data, these people are going to look like non-completers. And you know, importantly, if you've got an accountability formula to or goal to meet for the state, someone who just drops in and takes a couple of CTE courses and then leaves is going to look in your data like a failure in a sense. at the same time, that may be all the person wanted, and that may be enough for them to have brushed up on their skills, kept their job, gotten a promotion, but it's very hard to untangle that. And so when you see these low completion rates, I have little doubt that in many cases that's a very serious concern. But at the same time, there are people that are rolled up in that, that it isn't a concern at all. So it gets just very hard to disentangle.
Another thing that you talk about in your writing is that people who at least look like they may be structurally unemployed start retraining for a new industry and then end up going back to work in the same industry they were in.
Right. So one of the things that started me on this research is my interest in displaced workers. And what happens in the case of displaced workers, there are many of these federal employment and training programs focus on displaced or dislocated workers. But what can happen there is we think about a dislocated worker needing to retrain or perhaps invest in some type of CTE program if they've lost a job and their entire industry is going away or in the process of going away. You know, we hear a lot about manufacturing workers in the U.S., coal workers, steel workers, whose industries are just shrinking, or at least employment in their industry is shrinking, and how they need to retrain. But if you think about it from the perspective of an individual dislocated worker, that worker has, often these workers have spent many decades within one industry. So they lose that job. If they go to a different industry, one thing we know from many, many, many studies is that their earnings are going to be dramatically lower. Over time, they'll gain back a little bit. But if you've worked in manufacturing for 20 years and then you leave and take a job in the service sector, you have a lot of skills that were developed and useful in that other sector that aren't going to be useful anymore. And so your earnings fall. Well, if you take a worker who's facing that and say, well, you have two options. You can sort of hope to get reemployed in your old sector and maintain some of those high earnings, even though that sector is shrinking more and more every year, so who knows how long that job will last, or you can abandon the sector and come and get some retraining. Well, even with the retraining and with the positive results of investing in CTE, their earnings are still going to be less than if their industry hadn't faced these pressures ever and they could have just stayed in an expanding industry. So what tends to happen, and this evidence is largely anecdotal, but it is very consistent with the patterns we see in studies of earnings losses, is workers will begin retraining or consider retraining, but then maybe their industry doesn't decline as fast as maybe it was forecast, and they end up getting recalled to their old job or find a job in the same sector but with a different firm. And so they abandon the retraining because they want to get those high returns for a few more years or months or whatever it is. And so there is this sort of structural or really rational reason why many dislocated workers don't complete training programs or don't invest in them to begin with. And that's something that I think we have to think about policies to subsidize these workers if we really want to assist in this transition out of a declining industry. We have to think about the incentives that these individual workers face and maybe think about ways to make it more appealing to them to leave that sector and make investments in learning skills for a new sector.
So what are the biggest open questions that are left in looking at CTEs?
I think, you know, one question that we've talked about a bit is how to get more workers into these programs and through these programs, because I do think the evidence is very strong that at least in the public sector, it's not that we lack programs that can raise earnings effectively. The programs are there. They're being offered in community colleges. But I do think we need to understand a bit more about what will help workers or push workers to really invest in these programs and stick it out and complete the programs. We've started to learn a little bit about completion of degrees in community colleges more broadly. And so some recent experimental evidence has really shown the importance of various types of student support in community colleges, both academic support, but also because so many of these students are working full-time, balancing families, they're not your traditional college student. It seems to be very important to, if you want to increase completion rates, to provide some of those support services to community college students in general. I think we know less about the specific case of CTE, but my guess is that it would be very similar. The CTE students are, in some ways, even more different than traditional college students than just the broader set of community college students. So I think providing some of those supports, there have also been some interesting recent studies that show that if you're training workers for occupations, but they also have some sort of what are called developmental education needs, so maybe their reading or their math skills need to be brushed up. What often in the past programs have done is to force or require students to take the developmental courses first before they can take the more applied CTE occupation-related courses. And some recent evidence has suggested that if instead you combine those, so let students do some of the developmental work, but also let them get into what may seem a little more relevant to their jobs and their goals, the more CTE-focused work, then that seems to boost completion rates at all. So exploring more of these, learning a little bit more about how to get workers into the programs and encourage them to complete the programs, I think is one thing we need to know.
You also touched earlier on a need to inform workers about, or inform potential students about which programs are most effective.
Right. So there's also, I think, a large and growing need for information on these programs. I think for those of us in academics, it's very easy for us to say, well, everyone, and by everyone, we mean people like us who come to work in an educational institution every day, everyone understands the difference between an established public community college and a for-profit institution. But I think evidence would suggest that's not really the case. Or even if people understand the difference, they may not be well informed about what that difference means. And so I think we need to think a lot about how to use, we have excellent data on all of these outcomes and programs, but thinking about how to package that data and make it available to potential students is really important. Not just to help them choose the institution they'll attend, but also to help them choose what type of CTE might be best for them. So it's not only, by the way, which program offers the highest return, but really which program offers the highest return for someone who looks like me in terms of my abilities and interest. Sort of a side note is that we often think of community colleges as, well, they are almost always open access. So anyone can go to these colleges, anyone can enroll in these CTE programs. But it's important to realize that many of the CTE programs have fairly significant, rigorous academic prerequisites. So you can't get a lot of health-related CTEs if you're not able to perform basic scientific analysis or basic mathematics that you need to be able to go into those programs. And so they are open access, but there are also are some real requirements that students have to be able to pursue them. And so that type of information, thinking about how to design systems so that the requirements and the outcomes are as transparent as possible for people, is, I think it's really challenging, but probably one of the most important things we can do.
So even with open access, though, can't we still have capacity constraints where people are unable to get into the program they want?
This is another really critical issue. And we, you know, our work was in California, which I mentioned has the largest community college system in the nation. Extremely highly developed, really covers the entire state, urban, rural, all parts of the state. However, the issue that has become very clear in the recent experience in California that gets at this capacity question is, of course, comes back to funding of these programs. In particular, there's research done by Public Policy Institute of California that showed that during the Great Recession, when a record-breaking number of California and U.S. workers had lost jobs and were, if anything, in desperate need of some sort of retraining, and also, frankly, had the time to do it because they were out of the workforce anyway, during that period, there were actually cuts to CTE programs in the state because, of course, the state budget took a big hit in the Great Recession as well. And California is not unique in this. The other piece of this that gets really important for CTE programs, if you talk about funding and capacity issues, is that because CTE programs often require more than a classroom with desks and a chalkboard, they can be more expensive on a per student basis to offer. So if community colleges' funding takes a hit during a recession, they're going to be able to serve more students in many traditional academic disciplines than in some of these more specialized CTE fields, given the same number of dollars. And so thinking about protecting these programs, and I think, you know, I think about the unemployment insurance system where, yes, states, when there's a big recession, often states' individual unemployment compensation systems will go into deficit, but they're able to borrow. There's a federal, a way to use the federal government to get them through that downturn. I think we need to think about a way to do this for investments offering CTE, especially during recessionary periods, because that's when those capacity constraints are going to get really severe. And that's exactly when we don't want to be turning students away from these opportunities.
I guess also on the subject of funding, right? When students are taking CTEs, they won't be able to work, or at least not work as much. And so should the government be stepping in to help them cover their living expenses while they're getting CTEs?
Right. So that's another challenge. So if we think again about unemployed workers, in the U.S. can get half a year of unemployment benefits. That's not long enough, of course, for many of these CTE programs. It also, depending on your state, it can be challenging to maintain unemployment insurance if you're not basically spending full time, or at least saying you're spending full time looking for a job. And so thinking about ways to redesign unemployment insurance or other income support programs to recognize that giving some short-term income support might help or allow workers to invest in some CTE programs for a short period of time. But you're right, these programs are not extremely costly, certainly the public programs, but we forget about the fact that workers still have to support themselves or sometimes families. And so thinking about ways to design income support programs that can coincide and coexist and help support CTE investments is another really important policy goal.
Are there any other policy goals that come to mind that we need to address when it comes to CTEs?
I think there's another sort of lurking, I don't know if it's quite a policy goal, but it's sort of a part of our social or philosophical makeup as a country, which is that I think these programs, there's a kind of elitist view that these programs are really reserved for those who can't quite cut it in you know, quote unquote, real higher ed. And in fact, I think our president recently made some comments to that effect. And I think that's really another challenge to these programs, because if you look at the returns they offer, they are in the range to make them actually quite competitive with the lower range of investment in a four-year degree in some fields. And so I think taking seriously the idea that for some students and workers, given their preferences, their goals, these programs are quite valid choices and are going to offer them, you know, the chance to get into a sector where they can actually have long-standing careers, and that it's not a second best choice, is really important. I know very little about how we make that change, but I think, you know, thinking about some European examples where vocational education is a bit more standard, or at least seen on a bit more equal footing with more traditional academic tracks is one way to start thinking about that.
Okay, well, thank you very much for speaking with us today. And to peel back the curtain a bit, thank you very much for allowing me to try out this podcast. And I think that will end it there. That's it for this episode of American Poverty Research. I'd like to thank you very much for listening. I'd also like to thank Joe Kopecky and Socrates Kaitzen for the use of their song Down to Earth as our theme song. To our listeners, also, please consider leaving us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd also be very grateful if you could share our podcast with other people who you think may be interested. If you have any thoughts that you would like to send our way, or if you are a researcher who would like to be featured on the podcast, you can email us at povertycenter@ucdavis.edu.